Hello, and welcome to the ParXL podcast. I'm Peyton Howell, ParXL's Chief Commercial and Strategy Officer, and I'm really thrilled to be hosting this episode. Like so many of our listeners, I've spent the past few months working harder than ever, working and communicating in new ways, and at ParXL, we have dealt with the need to change and alter our clinical studies literally overnight. Convert many of our global employees to working only from home in a matter of days, and support our colleagues who have been working tirelessly on the front line, keeping site visits going when remote visits were not an option to support clinical trial continuity. I've seen incredible things across our company and our industry. At the same time, we've remained focused on what lies ahead. What are the changes that will last? And what further changes might we see from our industry in the next 6 months, next year, the next 5 years? Two of my colleagues, Paul Bridges, our worldwide head of regulatory and access, and Sheila Hegde, a partner with our Health Advances consulting subsidiary, recently collaborated on an article looking at just that. Paul addressed some of the regulatory changes that he thinks will last into the future. And Sheila took a look at the life science investment market and what we might see over the coming months. One thing we know is true, that we will be doing things in new ways. They called it the new pragmatism. I can tell you both that I have shared the article with some of our pharma partners and customers, and it's really resonated, particularly as we look beyond crisis mode to potential sustained innovation and impact. So here to share their perspectives with us are Paul Bridges and Sheila Hegde. Paul and Sheila, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Peyton.
Great to be here, Peyton.
Excellent. Well, let's get started. And first, let me ask very simply, what does the new pragmatism mean to you? And in particular, how does it relate to your respective areas of expertise? And let's start with you, Paul.
Thanks, Peyton, and thanks for referencing the recent article. For me, the new pragmatism is about changing the way that we work to ensure we're truly delivering for patients in the new post-pandemic environment. In the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, our regulatory experts, as you would expect, were working day and night to protect our ongoing clinical trials, which had to change just because of the reality taking place in the hospital environment. It meant quickly closing some sites, postponing enrollment, pivoting recruitment to other countries, and more of the traditional type things you expect from a regulatory department, but at a much higher speed. Where the new pragmatism comes in is our focus then quickly changed to new priorities. Our regulatory teams changed to advising on COVID-19 vaccine and therapeutic trials, to pivoting clinical studies, to operate in different ways that were reflective of the situation on the ground. And there was a pace to this that was different. And there was a pace to how the regulatory authorities engaged with this conversation that was very different. And I'll give you a few examples of that. As hospitals started to open back up, the emphasis changed again. It was focusing on our patients really being able to access ongoing studies. Ideas and ways of engaging around remote monitoring, decentralized trials became so much more important than they've ever been before. And the regulators really engaged in that. And where our regulatory team were really pivotal was engaging in those conversations in a super fast way, unlike any time before that I've seen, to really get the job done for patients, open up those studies, pivot trials, make therapies available. For me, that represents the new pragmatism, and I'm super excited that we're still working in that way.
That's really encouraging, Paul, because you're pointing to some things that feel like that silver lining of the pandemic overall. Sheila, let me get your perspective.
Sure. You know, for me and where we sit at Health Advances at ParXL, we partner with our clients on the commercial side. So we're really helping them think about commercialization as well as corporate and investor strategy. From the perspective of commercial strategy, you know, we've seen our clients really having to adapt to more efficient models in this era where they cannot go in person to educate physicians or to hold forums for patients. They really had to think about creative ways to leverage virtual tools, digital forums, in order to ensure they can still educate the stakeholders on their medicines and ensure that patients still can access and adhere to their medications. Interestingly, we're seeing a lot more adoption of telehealth, of digital therapeutics, of new and creative models of delivering care. I think this time is really challenging all of us to really think about how we can leverage technology in new ways and to potentially actually do our jobs even faster and more effectively after COVID-19. So I think there's some interesting things that we can learn from what we've just all endured that can change the way we do things moving forward.
Yeah, really well said. And you're pointing to some areas on the commercial and patient services side that really align with what Paul was describing in terms of clinical development and clinical research. So that's certainly exciting to see those parallels of innovation that have been accelerated, you know, by the pandemic. Paul, a number of your leaders come to us from the FDA and other global regulatory agencies. You know, what do you think is the new normal for regulators, and how can pharma sponsors adapt to working with regulators going forward?
Yes, an interesting question, and I think is very much aligned to the last comments that I was making around that conversation and the narrative with regulatory agencies in this new pragmatism environment that we're working with. Interpretation of the new guidelines, trying to be creative to get around roadblocks at the hospital, at the protocol level, et cetera, requires, you know, strategic thinking. And it's been really helpful that we have a rich heritage of staff that join us from regulators around the world. You mentioned FDA, EMA authorities. We've got China really helping us out as that market opened back up. And what you're describing is, I think, the ability to interpret the guidelines quickly, identify areas of risk, mitigate those to the satisfaction of the regulatory agencies, and quickly get things moving. And I think the staff that you refer to give us those insights and enable us to tap into the regulatory agency thinking and some of the culture and understand how that can be interpreted at the protocol level, at the clinical development level. And that's been super helpful, I can say, over the last few months. Really helpful.
And the way of working with the agencies, you're not doing face-to-face meetings, has that been impacted?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us wondered how that would play out. We loved visiting the FDA and having those face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball conversations that were so important and value-added. And we've had to change the way that we've engaged with the regulatory agencies. There's been a myriad of guidances come out around COVID. Typically, guidelines are issued. It takes 2 years to issue a guidelines of various drafts. We've been receiving guidances on a weekly basis and having to interpret them. Happily, we've still been able to secure that FaceTime with the agencies. Many of the agencies have pivoted quickly to technology-enabled virtual ways of working, and that's really been working well. I mean, many of us in the industry have spent lots of time on Teams, and so have the agencies, and that's really been delivering for us, and delivering because, to an extent, we've not been constrained by the formality of that one-hour face-to-face meeting at the agencies. So, if anything, I believe that the dynamic of the engagement, the regulatory agency, has been enriched by the pandemic. So again, another silver lining I'd like to call out.
Yeah, definitely encouraging. Sheila, you often advise life sciences companies at their very earliest stages when they're looking for that initial investment. What was the landscape really looking like prior to COVID-19? And where do you think investing is going, and what are you seeing?
I think one of the biggest shifts we're going to see is really investor enthusiasm, particularly in areas that were previously neglected, most notably infectious disease. You know, pre-COVID, when we were looking at the pipeline, less than 2% of pharmaceutical development in terms of number of programs were in infectious disease. And that's despite issues around, even predating COVID, around antimicrobial resistance, MRSA in hospitals, and we just weren't seeing investment because the incentives were not there. I think through COVID, we've all realized the consequences if we don't invest in basic novel antibiotics and antivirals. They're just so critical and really the foundation of our healthcare system and society. And so what we're seeing now is a renewed interest. I think, really notable along this line is the new initiative that was announced just earlier this week, the AMR Fund, or the Antimicrobial Resistance Fund that IFPMA is administrating, which involves the 20 top pharma companies all collaborating to fund $1 billion with the goal of developing and launching 3 novel antibiotics by the end of the decade. So that's absolutely another silver lining. And I think we're also seeing just an overall funding boom again in biotech as investors realize just the fundamental value of having therapies, not only for antibiotics, but across our diseases to make sure we have a healthy and functioning and robust economy. If you just look back at May and June, both have been record-setting months for biotech. The Jefferies report, I think, recorded $10.2 billion in funding in May, and then June again, an all-time high of $11.1 billion. So I think this is good news for our industry. We are having renewed interest in areas that were previously neglected, and overall, a healthy boost of funding that's going to bode well for what we develop into future years.
Yeah, that's really exciting, Sheila. I mean, when you translate that in terms of the shift in investment dollars, what would that mean from a patient perspective, do you think?
I think we're going to have patients that previously had limited options having more options and more effective options. I think also we'll see some acceleration where areas, again, I'll point to infectious disease, but even tropical or other neglected diseases will suddenly have a boost of funding, and hopefully we'll see novel therapies launch in the next decade. And then that overall boost in biotech funding is going to have positive effects across diseases, across the board. Frankly, we're seeing even areas like cardiovascular have renewed interest in development. So I think for patients, what that ultimately means is more options, more effective options, and sooner.
Wow, it sounds like you're busier than ever, but that's all going to be good news long-term for patients, which is exciting. Paul, you also oversee PARXL's real-world evidence area, or RWE, which is a critical area of investment and growth. Leveraging RWE to really redefine how clinical trials are conducted is especially important during the pandemic. Have you seen RWE being used more effectively during this time? And have you seen regulators respond positively?
Oh, yes. So real-world evidence was brought closer to the regulatory and access teams in PARXL because we really anticipated that there would be a shift enabled by technology to engaging real-world evidence in the more traditional drug development paradigm. And COVID has definitely accelerated that. I'm thankful that we made that shift because we were ready for this change. And it's a change that's played out very, very quickly during the pandemic. I'd call out that in the US, the FDA now has really stepped up its engagement openly around real-world evidence. They're talking in public fora about the need to combine the data from traditional randomized clinical trials with RWE for the benefit of patients. And that's really been accelerated during the COVID-19 research. We expect this engagement will continue, and we expect the acceleration to continue with the inclusion of RWE in more traditional product evaluation going forward. So I think this is one occasion where we read the tea leaves, and COVID really has accelerated that shift. An example, FDA related, is that the FDA were talking about Cure ID, their app-based program that they've been encouraging sponsors to consider, which allows RWE to be collected and shared amongst physicians and regulators. And as recently as last week, the FDA was saying that we need to learn from each and every patient, from the data all around us, in the context of RWE. PARXL ourselves have developed our own app. We're excited that we are a front four leader in this area. We have an integrated research platform called Keeping Patients First, hashtag Keeping Patients First. And through this app, we're able to leverage our in-house RWE data and informatics capabilities to really address the convergence of real-world data and real-world evidence and regulatory and drug development in a way that we haven't been able to before. So some really excited changes. And I'm thankful that the technology has become available just at the right time when we needed it for patients in this COVID environment. And I anticipate in the new pragmatic reality, we're going to be leveraging this much, much more.
Incredibly exciting, right? I mean, we've all been waiting for this, right? To see that real world patient experience and that data, at least be able to use that information more quickly and harness the power of that. And certainly related to COVID-19, we need that. Thank you, Paul. So I'm going to shift gears on you both a little bit. I'd like to get personal a bit. We've all seen an impact on the way we live, the way we work. What has been a lesson that you've learned over the past few months? And Paul, I'd like to start with you.
Yeah, for me, it is be present and be visible. When we all were forced to work from home, we reflected on the fact that we would no longer be seeing our colleagues so much. We talked about less face-to-face interaction with regulatory agencies, clients, sponsors, patients. But actually, in some ways, as I reflected upon earlier, the reverse has been true. The technology has enabled us to be more visible to global stakeholders. And drug development is global. And this, again, I think is an exciting opportunity. I spend more time face-to-face with my teams around the world, with my clients around the world, than I ever did before through the technology over the web and over the cloud. And that's had the opposite effect that we all feared. It's brought us closer, which is great. So my lesson is communicate, take the face time to really build relationships, and that's really beneficial to everybody. So you know, a simple thing, you know, use the technology and it brings us closer.
You know, it's amazing how much we're all seeing each other now. And before, we would all just hop on the phone, and now we all just hop on Zoom or hop on Teams or one of the platforms. And what's also interesting is I think, you know, everyone now is almost bonding, right? We're all facing the same challenges. We're all trying to work from home. And in fact, it's kind of made everyone more human and more personable. And whether we're seeing clients and some of their kids popping up on the screen or everyone working from their homes, I think it's just brought us closer, not only through the face-to-face, but just as people. And I think in a lot of ways, that's going to build stronger relationships moving forward.
Perfectly said by both of you. I would definitely echo that. I definitely feel closer to my global colleagues. You know, we're seeing each other in each other's home, but the frequency with which I'm talking to colleagues like you, Paul, in Dublin, colleagues in Berlin, colleagues in Asia, it's really different. I've even been now on calls with, for example, our team in India, where we're talking about really, you know, difficult topics together, but we're all physically able to see each other eye to eye, and the conversation is just so much richer. So I think it's helped. It's definitely helped with customers as well. You know, videos become routine. And I think that connectivity has just been a huge advantage. So building on that, you know, I know there's a lot we can learn from the innovation, how we've embraced change, how we've embraced technology in recent months. Can each of you share an example of an innovation, an example of your new pragmatism to relate it to your article, or a change that you've seen in the past few months that would have really been unheard of before 2020? And Sheila, maybe I'll pick you to start on this one, if you don't mind.
Sure. I actually think I might refer back to the AMR Action Fund. You know, it would have been unheard of for the top 20 manufacturers in biopharma to come together to co-fund a whole research and development effort around new antibiotics. You know, again, the field was neglected, there weren't market incentives. And so seeing this occur and occur so quickly is really compelling and something that I think is a result of the new pragmatism.
That's a great example. Paul, I'm going to put you on the spot now.
Again, back to the approach from regulators and their changed approach because of pragmatism. I take FDA GMP inspections. The guidelines have always anticipated the use of virtual inspections, right? I have a team of GMP experts, ex-agency staff who've spend a lot of their time previously jumping onto planes and helping our clients remediate against FDA enforcement actions, so on and so forth. And that's come to a halt. Now, the guidelines have always anticipated the use of remote inspections, remote audits, virtual technology, et cetera, but it really wasn't used to any great extent. Now that's changing. FDA is really, as we mentioned earlier, embracing alternative technologies to make these kinds of assessments, which is good for everyone. Now, we all miss FaceTime with each other. I was reflecting with a colleague just yesterday, one of the last trips I made to Paris, and we had a fabulous meal together. That kind of stuff we miss. You know, I'm not going to lie about that. But time spent on planes, getting to remote sites to do valuable inspections for patients, isn't always value added. And so if we can do that work remotely, satisfy the FDA, do it in a way that's compliant, I think that's a win-win for everybody. A win for us, a win for FDA, but particularly a win for clients who need these therapies. The other element of this is we're also seeing governments, countries, populations valuing pharmaceutical infrastructure. So vaccines, plants, manufacturing capabilities in local countries are becoming so much more important. And I think that's, again, encouraging that the population now truly values pharma, therapeutics at a societal level for the benefit it can really bring. It's a shame that it takes something as devastating as COVID to bring that change about. But I think there has been a change, and we reflect upon that in the article.
No, you're right, Paul. I hadn't even really thought about virtual inspections. I mean, that's a great example, but you know, the impact of that, but you're right. Now, will we be able to finally address some of our drug shortage and other issues, right? Because we really do look at the global supply chain completely differently. It's much more vulnerable, right, than we probably acknowledged in the past. And these are ways to tackle that. So fantastic examples. I really appreciate that. And it's going to impact the patient. You know, the one that's, you know, impacting us at PARXL that's been exciting is we've long been doing decentralized clinical trials, or what we used to call virtual trials. And, you know, it was a struggle, frankly, to get those, you know, brought into protocols and utilized. And now it's the majority. In fact, there's really not a proposal that we're talking about today that doesn't have some aspect of decentralized clinical trials in it. And that's a sea change in a matter of days, but an exciting one in terms of embracing things that really can make a tremendous difference in terms of patient access to clinical trials, the convenience, and hopefully tackling even the deeper issues in terms of clinical trial diversity. So you're right. It's an exciting time, you know, to try and find a positive in a pandemic in terms of those innovations. So one last question for you each. How are we putting this new pragmatism to work to benefit patients? So Sheila, what do you think?
I think at a macro level, given the greater investment, given some of the leverage of these technologies to do trials more effectively, efficiently, even on the regulatory front, at the end of the day, I think what that means is, again, more treatments sooner to patients. And what's better than that, ultimately? But I'd also speak to, you know, here at PARXL, we're very patient-centric in all of our trials and all the work that we do. And during this pandemic, we've had to engage earlier with patients to understand how to design studies that they're comfortable participating in during this time, striking the right balance between virtual and on-site visits, for example, to make sure patients can still build a rapport. So these types of lessons and experience around early engagement will continue, and we'll be able to bring the patient voice even more effectively in the very first stages of development.
Yeah, that's exciting. I mean, more treatments, more quickly, and that sensitivity to that urgency, it's critical. Paul, how about some changes for you?
Yeah, so I'll probably tee off. I'm glad you mentioned decentralized trials just now, because that's been a key part of what we've been doing to benefit patients. I've spoken a lot about the COVID environment. I'll try and be future looking now and put the COVID stuff behind us. Decentralized trials and remote monitoring, that way of working is here to stay. And throughout the pandemic and up to now, my regulatory teams have been responding to requests around decentralized trials, as you mentioned. And one of the things that we had to quickly put in place was a database of requirements globally to support new protocols for new products and therapeutics, to identify which regions, which countries were supportive of decentralized ways of working, what were the requirements, so that we can help our clients to develop the protocols of the future with this as a reality. And we've got that database working now. It enables us to impact protocols, as you've just discussed, and I think future-proof the clinical trials that will continue to deliver for patients. So I think we've flexed to the new pandemic environment. I think we're getting through it, and we're now forward looking, and that can only benefit patients, I think.
Fantastic examples of the new pragmatism and a lot of hope from both of you. So thank you, Paul and Sheila. It's been a delight to speak with you and learn about your perspective and really your impressive areas of expertise. So thank you. Thank you for all you and your teams are doing to keep drug development moving forward for patients and really for all of us during this time.
Great. Thank you, Peyton. It was a great discussion.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Thank you, Peyton.
To our listeners, you can read Paul and Sheila's article, The New Pragmatism, on our website, parexcel.com, right under this podcast. Please follow Parexcel on social media to learn more about our insights from our experts like Paul and Sheila. And subscribe to our podcast on Google Play, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. We've tackled some interesting topics recently, like the use of wearables in clinical trials and precision medicine in biotech. We welcome your reviews, your comments about what you want to hear in future episodes. And until next time, thank you for listening.